Hey, it's the Great Debates.
All right.
Hi, Dave. Wait.
No Dave. Still no Dave.
Who is this then?
This, guys, is Owen Ellickson.
Hi.
Oh,
television Owen. Writer, wrestling fan, dad, dog lover. I brought him to fill in for Dave. No one can replace Dave.
No.
But Owen can perhaps fill in.
I believe it.
How are you doing with the absence of Dave,
by the way? He's a guest debater. I'm suffering. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Dave is yin to my yang. He's a good foil. I need him there.
Do you feel like your craft is...
He's a good foil and a good fellow.
Yes. Do you feel like your craft is improving in his absence? That you're cross-training different opponents?
I think my pure debate craft is actually getting softer.
Softer?
I think my hosting and general broadcasting might be improving.
I would agree with that.
I get these guests on. I'm trying to listen more. You know, Dave, I'm always trying to shut him down. Hey, are we here to chat? Or are we here to debate?
No, we're going to debate. I'm going to get my iPhone out here and get a timer set.
Tell
I'm
me
change
you have
it
a
from
listener top.
My nap time amount of 19 minutes to my micro debate time of 3 minutes.
How'd you land on 19 minutes as a nap time?
4 minute experimentation. Okay. Started with 24 minutes. That was a little too long, a little too groggy.
Too juicy.
19, you kind of leap up and you're ready to go. Speaking of being ready to go, mm-hmm. I have a micro debate. Healy's going to take the pro. This is a listener top submitted by listener Aaron M. Aaron, thank you.
Email us, we'll get you a t-shirt or something.
Exactly. Healy taking the pro, 4 minutes on the clock. Dunkin' Donuts is a bakery.
Hi, I'm Steve Healy, and I'm taking a pro. Dunkin' Donuts bakes stuff. They bake donuts. They bake croissants. They bake muffins. They also will serve you a nice hot cup of coffee. And in common parlance, what do we call such a place that makes you breakfast treats plus a cup of coffee? We call that place a bakery. That's what Dunkin' Donuts is, a friendly neighborhood bakery.
Dunkin' Donuts is a great many things. Their coffee is delicious. They make wonderful flatbread sandwiches. I love their soups. You can get a nice True Moo chocolate milk there, and you can often get a newspaper. It is true that they bake things, but my mom's house has baked things from time to time. My mom's house is not a bakery. Dunkin' Donuts is far too grand and wonderful a place to be confined into the small world of bakeries. That is a tiny subset of what Dunkin' Donuts does for all of us every day.
Okay, let me postulate. Imagine a European visitor has come to visit. They're not really familiar with American culture, maybe not even with our language. You can speak this person's language. Let's say it's Finnish perfectly. And you're trying to say to them in Finnish, we're going to go to this wonderful American place, Dunkin' Donuts. They make these little breakfast treats that you eat and little sandwiches. And surely by now, the Finnish person would already say whatever the Finnish word is for bakery.
And it's true that an outsider might incorrectly put it into the sad, drab box of bakeries. But I would stop that person in their tracks and say, good news. You're not just going to a bakery. You're going to Dunkin' Donuts. You have to see all the things you can do there. And when they get there, they'll say, I was a fool to use my language's word for bakery for this wonderful place, this garden of delights, Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay, let me pause you here and open your mind to the richness of the word bakery. It can mean all kinds of things. Inside a Ralph's grocery store, there can be a bakery that's just a part of the Ralph's experience. Similarly,
is that Ralph's a bakery?
A bakery can, like Jones on Third, have short ribs and clam chowder, a wide diversity of foods. You can't win this debate on the idea that Dunkin' Donuts is too much for a bakery, because as we all know, bakeries can have a wild variety of things. They can expand almost as far as the mind can imagine. That's what's so powerful about the English word bakery. It starts with just baking anything and expands to the rich wonders that you'd find at a pain quotidien.
I love bakeries. I yield to no one in my admiration for bakeries. Dunkin' Donuts is so much bigger and grander than that, that it's an insult to put it into that category.
How often do you go to Dunkin' Donuts?
Well, I am geographically prevented from going there, but I used to go about 4 days a week.
Okay, and what word would you use to describe it?
Dunkin' Donuts. It's like saying love is an emotion. Love is love, man. Love is the best thing of all.
That's true. Love is love, but love is also an emotion. Look, imagine a matter of an emergency with your Finnish friend. You're like, he doesn't have a lot of time. He needs to know what he's getting into before he gets to Dunkin' Donuts. You have to tell him really fast what he's getting into. Couldn't you just say, okay, look, it's a bakery. Got it. Whatever the Finnish word is for bakery. He's like, got it. He goes in. He's surprised by all the wonderful extra stuff, the quesadillas and the flatbreads and whatnot. But he basically got the idea. The word bakery would convey most of the magic of Dunkin' Donuts to a foreigner or a space alien.
I would say you could as accurately call it a bathroom.
What?
Can I just tell you that I love the sport of debate?
Me too, yeah.
It's exhilarating.
It's so fun and exciting, and you don't know where it's going to take you, and it's making something out of nothing.
I'm going with Owen. Heels, I'm sorry, he's mad.
I think I know how Dave feels.
No, I just thought it was very expansive to the mind to suggest that. I thought we were going to come down on Dunkin' Donuts. It was a brilliant stroke to lift it up, to raise it up. I have to say that I thought your Ralph's point kind of sunk it for you.
I felt the whole time in that debate that there was a silver bullet that's a bakery has to make bread.
Uh-huh.
And Dunkin' Donuts, I doubt, makes any kind of bread.
I don't think,
they might heat some bread.
I think they may get dangerously close to breads. Yeah, they grill breads.
You can't get
these flatbreads. Folks, these flatbreads are pretty good.
Hey, are we into host chat?
Yeah, we're there.
Can we get out of the acrimony of judging the debate and move exactly into the pleasant time of experiencing our guest?
Mm-hmm. Dave, oh, and welcome.
Thank you.
You arrived here with a gallon of milk.
I did.
What's going on there?
I went to Pavilions this morning. It was sort of a tough trip. And on the way back, I forgot to put the milk inside and the detergent inside. So I am housing the milk here in the hopes that it is salvageable.
How long has that milk been outside? What kind of temps?
We gave it about 8 hours in the car.
That milk's been 8 hours in the car?
Yeah.
It was a cool day.
It was a cool day. I think it got 3 hours of direct sun, maybe?
Uh-huh. A windy day.
We're going to take a look at it. We're going to get under the hood.
Hey, if we have any dairy experts listening, please weigh in. Tweet at us, email us, greatdebate69.
If the bottle is sealed and hasn't yet been opened and it's pasteurized, it must last a little bit longer.
Hey, maybe it even improves. Like, so I don't know. It could be in a couple of years we'll be drinking sun-aged milk. Mm-hmm. That'll be like at
warm milk.
French Laundry, they'll be like sun-aged milk on a...
sun milk.
I'm guessing the way I'm going to play this is that I will drink the milk, but I will not let my family drink it.
Okay. How much milk do you drink?
I hit milk pretty hard. I have, I would say I have 2 pint glasses of skim milk a night.
Wow.
Yeah.
I used to drink a ton of milk. I just don't do it anymore.
We're all tall dudes. Yeah. Everyone talking is over 6 feet tall.
Yes.
Also drank a ton of milk.
Yeah, I was a big just milk drinker.
I think there's something there. Yeah. I really do. Milk.
Now, before we started recording, Owen, you threw a term at me that's from WWE.
Yes.
You were saying that in the absence of Dave, I'm not debating just the good side or the bad side. I'm a what?
You're a tweener.
A tweener.
Yeah.
What's a tweener?
Yeah.
A tweener is, in wrestling parlance, your good guys are your baby faces and your bad guys are your heels. Here at the Great Debates, Dave usually works baby. Steve works baby, excuse me, and Dave always works heel.
Funny that it's that way.
In Dave's absence, Steve is a little unmoored, and he's going back and forth a little bit. He's sort of in the Steve Austin, Razor Ramon category of, we're not sure where this guy's coming from. We think we like him, but every once in a while, there's a little edge that takes you unawares.
Is that an area to play successfully, or would you advise me to go back to full baby?
I think you are a marvelous pure baby face in the tradition of Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat,
yes. Of course.
Never went heel, never needed to. When you're a wonderful baby face, let those colors fly, baby.
You took me once to see a wrestling match at sub full professional.
Yes.
It was at the Silver Lake Jewish Community Center.
Yes. The Hollywood Los Feliz JCC. That was Pro Wrestling Guerrilla.
And
shout out.
We saw, I know we saw the UK kid.
UK kid.
Take on the American Dragon.
Brian Danielson.
And I knew for sure whose side I was on.
Yes. The UK kid, I believe, kept saying, UK kid, baby.
Yeah. And he kept calling the audience wankers. You're all a bunch of wankers. And I was not at all convinced he was really from the UK.
A little on the nose. Wrestling isn't afraid to just be what it is.
That was a ladder match?
There was a ladder match that night. I think it was Mr. Wrestling Kevin Steen, now known to the world as Kevin Owens, against Super Dragon, I want to say.
Okay, and just to tell people what a ladder match is, and then we'll have some more debates.
Well, there are two kinds of ladder matches. One is a belt is suspended from the ceiling. Whoever retrieves the belt first becomes the holder of that belt as champion. The other is just that you have a ladder and you hit each other with it. I believe that was the ladder, but I also believe it was for the Pro Wrestling Guerrilla World Heavyweight Championship.
So there's a belt, you have a ladder in the ring. The goal is just climb up the ladder, grab the belt. But as you can imagine, the ladder
becomes the key implement in the match.
Hijinks
control
may
the ladder.
Ensue.
They say, let me just say, in a ladder match.
Yes.
So, Owen, we're going to do a topic that you sort of brought to the table here for our next debate. Can you tell us a little bit about how we got here? It has to do with ranking movies.
Well, you know, this is something that everybody wants to do, and I've had the good fortune to have the free time to get it done. I have ranked every movie I've ever seen. I believe I've seen 1,438 movies. And, you know, these answers are inside of us, and I already found them inside of me, and I look forward to everybody doing the same.
People can see this on your Twitter and check in on your Owens Flick Chart Twitter.
Yes, I have a separate Twitter account for my Flick Chart.
Okay. And wow. People sometimes ask you, like, why didn't you rank Die Hard higher or whatever?
Because it was a worse movie.
Right.
That's although, Die Hard is only worse than seven movies that I've seen.
Wow, Die Hard is the eighth best movie you've seen.
Yes, the important caveat is there could be better movies, I just haven't seen them.
Oh, and then the rankings can change.
Well,
every time you incorporate a new
perhaps
movie.
Perhaps they'll change tonight.
Yes, when that. You add a new movie, they can change. I think on rewatch, if you want to take a look, maybe throw a re-rank in there, that's okay. Other than that, I think you're on pretty dangerous ground. Let the truth reveal itself.
Well, what happens if you come back to a movie later in life and it makes a different impression on you?
And then you could throw a re-rank at it.
Yeah. What happens if you lose a debate about your rankings?
We're going to find out. We're going to find out. Okay, I'm going to have Owen take the pro. That means you're going to deliver the opening statement. We're going to do another four-minute debate, I think, because right. I still have even yet another debate great. That I want to get to later. The topic is Owen Ellickson taking the pro, 4 minutes on the clock. Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl is better than Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I'm Owen Ellickson. I'm taking the pro. Look, you can go to my Flick Chart. This question is answered. I feel a little bad for Steve that we're even doing this. This is like arguing that seven is higher than four. Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl is not a perfect movie. It's a little long as action movies of these days start to go. Orlando Bloom, eh. And some of the effects look a little silly. It is, however, an exciting movie. Johnny Depp's performance is a delight. And it is, if it is anything, better than Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay, I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the con. I think that Owen has allowed himself to fall for the Slugworthian thrills of Pirates of the Caribbean and overlook the insane classic that is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. First of all, Gene Wilder, one of the most incredible performances of all times. This movie has twists and turns. It starts out with a kid who's so poor, his two grandparents have to sleep together in a bed. Like, that is an extreme version of the underprivileged England or America, I don't even know where the movie's set, I guess in England, that is too often ignored on the silver screen. We have some of the classic characters of all time. Veruca Salt. On Veruca Salt alone, you can't name a single character from Pirates of the Caribbean that has a name or an image or a screen presence as powerful as Veruca Salt. Plus, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory has great songs. There's some memorable songs in that film. Very fun musical. Oompa Loompas. Who had ever seen anything like green painted midgets singing?
I was
you
hoping
these
you wouldn't do this to
riddles.
Yourself. We're already at the end of the debate.
Finally, we have a film that's about candy. And what kid eating candy at the movies doesn't want to think about candy, have more candy? Meanwhile, we've got a movie with tired Orlando Bloom, sexless Keira Knightley. Yeah, Johnny Depp brings something to the table, but otherwise this is a flat cartoon of a film that did nothing to advance cinema.
Oh, Steven. Listen, Gene Wilder was a delight, dearly departed. He's not in the movie as much as you think. You're spending a lot of time with lunky kid actors and lunky old people. Veruca Salt is a fun idea. When she's on the screen, it's a little bit of a slog. Most of those songs are pretty rough. The Oompa Loompa scene is offensive, disturbing.
Offensive to who? Oompa Loompas?
To little people.
Well, they have 5 or 6 roles in the film.
Well, that's a fair point.
How many little people were given a role in Pirates of the Caribbean? 0.
Honestly, there's no way to know. Very possible. There's a lot of stuff going on in that movie. We can't say for sure. Look, Willy Wonka, we all remember liking it. We liked liking it. It was a movie that made us feel wonder and imagination. But a lot of that was just our kid minds doing the work. If you watch it now, it's a little drab. It's a little slow. It's pleasant. It's fine. It's a good movie. It's just worse than Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
Okay, let's go to the larger... I think I'll give Pirates of the Black Pearl a little bit of flair. I think Willy Wonka blows it away as like a 20-year epic in terms of like a generational-level film in terms of how much interesting color and film craft is involved. Pirates of the Caribbean, whatever, they got some guys in a green room, whatever, they did fine. But let's talk about the morality of the films. Like, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, like, it has this insane morality tale. I don't want to say too much because I might spoil it, but there's a lot in the film about capitalism.
Gobstopper. He gives back the gobstopper. He gets the chocolate kingdom because he gives back the gobstopper.
About how corporations control us, how branding gets done, how we create our images. I got carried away.
No, I think you came back hard you intended to win and you set your mind to it and you did.
All right.
I think that was a good performance. Sorry.
I think you won that one. It's a good reminder of how the wrong topic can win if handled properly. So I tip my cap to you, Steve Haley.
What did you think? Like, you was there anything about Pirates that you wish you'd had the chance to bring up that
I hit the crossroads of was I going to try to emulate the Johnny Depp voice or not? And I decided not to.
Would have been
Captain Jack Sparrow.
A big swing.
I believe Jeffrey Rush played Captain Barboza because at one point
Johnny Depp tempts
him by saying he could be Commodore Barboza. I believe that actually the morality of those two movies is extremely similar.
Yeah,
I believe
movies are like, do you want to be a good guy or a bad guy?
I think both movies are everybody's pretty greedy, and then there is a greed ceiling that one character does not go past, and then they win all sorts of prizes.
Yeah. You know, the Johnny Depp character in that movie, he bases a lot of it on his friend Keith Richards, right? And so... when I learned that the audiobook of Keith Richards' life was read in part by Johnny Depp, I was very excited about this because I thought, all right, he's going to really embody. Guess what? The chapters that are read by Johnny Depp are the most boring, slow, like deathly, awful part of the book. And then this other kind of professional reader steps in and acts like Keith Richards and sounds sort of like Keith Richards, and it's really fun. And then at the end, for 2 more chapters, Johnny Depp comes in and he talks really slowly, and it's just a boring mess.
I have a 3-year-old daughter, and we have a copy of The Giving Tree, the Shel Silverstein classic book. Wonderful, very sad book, but it came with a CD in the back of Shel Silverstein reading it, and we didn't have the capability to play a CD, but somehow a neighbor who babysits for our daughter gave her her old boombox. So we said, oh, this is great. We can finally listen to Shel Silverstein read The Giving Tree. It was the most phoned in. Several words were different. I'm not even sure if he had the book as a reference. He was just slowly kind of loosely hitting the main points of The Giving Tree. And he had such a wonderful voice, and he used that ability not at all in this. It was the most disappointing thing I've ever heard in my life.
What the hell was going on with Shel Silverstein?
Fascinating character.
What a guy.
When Seth Rogen is like 60 or something, maybe they should make a...
Please,
yes. Make that happen. Shel Silverstein going to the Playboy Mansion whatever.
God. You can see Shell, just the big Shell, billboard. Yeah.
Tell me we have time for another debate.
I think we have time for one more debate if we do it quickly.
Yes.
Maybe we'll make it a 3-minute
debate. All right.
Okay, here we go. Owen taking the pro again. 3 minutes on the clock. Are you ready?
Yes.
The Great Debates has a diversity problem.
I'm Owen Ellickson, and I'm taking the slam dunk pro. Let's address the elephant in this white male room, fellas. Last summer, I believe, Steve Healy, co-host of The Great Debates, announced the Great Debates Diversity Initiative, where they said, let's go ahead and get on more types of people. Maybe we're too much in this box of white male comedy writers. Here I sit. The second straight heterosexual, cis, white male television comedy writer in a row. I believe a third one will be here later tonight. Fabricio was wonderful. He was a breath of fresh air. Fabricio alone is not enough. Boys, it's time to put in the work. Let's get rid of the me's and let's find some new voices.
Okay, listen. I did my best with the Great Debates Diversity Initiative. The fact is, there's a certain kind of person who's into the Great Debates, like, and is available to be on the Great Debates, and is excited to be on the Great Debates. It tends to be white male comedy writers,
sallow,
comedy adjacent people. Now, look, you could argue that this is a problem. I'm not sure that it's not, but there has to be a space in society for something that's just like, it is what it is.
Kind of an exclusive club, okay, if you look, will.
Again, I'm not trying to make it exclusive. It just happens to, that's just happens to be how it works out. And I felt a lot better about this when I heard Barry Jenkins, the director of the film Moonlight.
Hardball.
He was saying, he was talking after he won the Golden Globe or something, and he was saying, like, look, I didn't try to make a story for the whole world. I tried to make a story that was about my experience, something that I understood working with the guy that wrote it. And, you know, when you make that, other people, Germany, took the film to Germany. They respect it. They understand it. Like, the way to make a universal story is to make your story. And yeah, I would love to have more diverse voices.
The way to make a universal story may not be to host a series of debates on the topics of the day.
I would love to have more diversity on the Great Debates. I love to hear from diverse listeners. But look, the Great Debates at its heart is Steve, Dave, and Dan debating, and with Dan moderating. And, you know, we have guests from time to time who are fans of the Great Debates and passionate about the show. But basically, we're telling the story of these three people. And I don't think we have a diversity problem. I think there's always room for improvement. But
I think you may have out-argued me, but you start from such a deep hole.
I don't think that I should give a judgment on this one.
No, I don't think with judgment. I think, and by the way, if you are a diverse young person, that is to say, not white, not cis, not a man, and you are
not a comedy writer,
not a comedy writer, and you're passionate about the Great Debates, write to us, tweet at us.
And I should say, all my joking aside, Dan Graney was a wonderful guest. Everybody who appears on the Great Debates is wonderful, and yeah, many of them are good friends of mine. So I am not actually critical. And I think could argue that Great Debates is not important enough to need to be diverse.
Yeah.
I mean, could be in its own little pocket of the world, as you said.
Owen.
Yes.
Thank you for coming here.
Thank you for having me. Great Debates. Longtime fan. This was a real pleasure for me. Daniel, it was a delight to hear the voice in person.
Oh my God, man. It was so good having you here. I'm a big fan of your Twitter. Guys, if you haven't followed Owen Ellickson on Twitter yet, you're missing out on something very special. Look him up. I'm telling you, you're going to love it. And all the things that Steve said to introduce Owen earlier, he's a comedy writer, a family man that really comes out in his Twitter, I feel like, in the funniest ways. And it's definitely worth checking out.
Can I record? Can I put out a lot of people have been asking how they can support Dave. You know, mm-hmm. Dave's really busy in his job.
Oh.
Dave handles the merch store for the Great Debates. He mm-hmm. put all that together.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Look at it. I think you'll agree he went crazy. There's way too many options.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want to support Dave King,
yeah,
buy a Great Debates t-shirt. Buy a Great Debates mug.
He'll feel validated and good.
He'll get a little email that says somebody made an order in Shopify, and he'll be like,
he'll be touched by that.
Thinking about me.
It's totally true. Meanwhile, guys, would love it if you write to us, tweet at Owen. We're Great Debate 69 everywhere. Owen is Owen Ellickson, which is like O-N-L-X-N, I think.
O-N-L-X-N.
It's brilliant.
I've been charmed by it since I was two.
Do you think your dad did that on purpose, being a Scrabble junkie?
I think it's more likely that my mother, L-N-L-X-N, did it.
Amazing. Hey, guys, I want to put this out there that the Great Debates is looking for a new audio engineer to help us with the post-production on our show. If you're interested in broadcast, Pro Tools, all that, drop us a line. Let us know. You don't have to be in Los Angeles. You can be anywhere in the country or the world for that matter. All right, guys, really enjoyed myself this week, and I'm looking forward to seeing you next week on the Great Debates.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three. Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination.
The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.